Do you have like a favorite kind of tea?
Scottish breakfast tea.
I feel like I'd get down with that. My sister brought me back some like the best Scottish tea from Scotland. Those guys know how to do tea. I'm part Scottish, part German. So
right on.
Like those are my roots. Right. People on. Also have whiskey with their oatmeal in the mornings.
That would be the death of me.
I was like, I don't know how much I would get done if I started every day like that.
Not a lot.
Not much, yeah. I don't think. They do it, I guess. How have you been, man? I haven't seen you in a hot minute.
I've been all right. I've been working my tail off. Like my business, aside from music, has been growing quite a bit.
That's great.
It's great, but it's really a monster. Like it's taken over everything other than like family time, basically. It's like I think last week I worked like 70 something hours. It's just a lot. Like I'm pulling 12 hour days regularly.
I thought I was busy.
I mean, it's like, you know, getting's good, so gotta get it.
Yeah, that's crazy. And on top of that, you are like about to release an album that has 16 tracks. I think a time machine would probably be your best friend right now. That sounds like a lot.
It was originally 28 tracks, and I cut it down to 16.
I have probably 28 half-finished projects, but I don't know if I would put all of them into an album. That's like wildly ambitious.
I don't think I was gonna. I was like, all right, here's all the stuff that I could possibly release right now. Some of it jumped out as obviously like, okay, that doesn't fit. And then, you know, some was like, all right, well, that's not as polished as the rest of them. So you start knocking them out. I did a couple of streams where I would just go through and like take the projects out of the album folder, you know, one at a time. I actually let my chat help me vote on a couple of things. I was like, should we keep this one or not? And people were like, no or yes. I was like, all right, thumbs down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's good to have that crowd feedback too, for sure. I know people who have like uploaded stuff to SoundCloud just for a week just to see how popular it was, like, and then shared it. I've seen
like SubmitHub has a hot or not feature where you can get like free feedback. There's some good Discord communities like Kenny Beats, Reddit communities.
I haven't tried SubmitHub's hot or not, basically, for tracks.
Yeah.
Remember that old site? People upload, see if you're hot or not, and people would rate you.
Yeah.
It's like the same thing for music.
Or hot or not.
Nothing destroys somebody's self-esteem like uploading a photo and letting the world vote on how hot you are.
Didn't Zuckerberg make that site?
Did he? No way.
I think he made something like that before he made Facebook. Like, it was the precursor to Facebook. I want to say, maybe it wasn't hot or not, but like dead ass, like something very similar to that is like his first project.
That's hilarious. Yes, James Hong and Jim Young from Silicon Valley.
Oh, okay.
Hot or not, man. That was like early 2000s.
Uh-huh.
Well, anyway, yeah, good work on the album. I think one of my favorites was the Steam. What was it?
Steam Heat.
Steam Heat, yeah. I feel like that could be a track on like The Matrix. I could totally see that being in there, like people fighting, like the intro.
Slow motion gunfights.
Yeah.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah, for sure. It was a vibe. The mix was great too, especially that track. That really popped. Did Mr. Bill help you with like some of the mastering?
He was involved on I Was Wrong, the track.
Okay.
And so Primo, the guy that wrote that track with me, he and I are both good friends with Bill. We actually both helped build his studio. So
yeah.
I was like, you know, Morgan, that Primo and I, and you like our music, and like, let's show me how you would mix and do this track. Right. It's like, we were hanging out one day and he was like, you're almost done with the album. I was like, yeah, I'm done. I got this one track I'm not so sure on. And then he showed me basically like from scratch. Like, I gave him the project file and I got to watch him mix my song, which was
that's nice.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So I saw how he did it and I just like fucking sat there and took notes. Just notes, 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 notes.
That's cool.
I watched him do the whole thing, like watched him mix it, watched him get a clean master and like what plugins he was using. And I didn't have like five plugins that he was using. I went out the next day and bought them all. And like I saw him do that and it came out so clean, like, cause he spent like 4 hours on it basically, just mixing this one track, like while I was watching him. I already had it like 90% of the way there, you know? But like that 10% I didn't know. Like, I watched him do that and then I went home and I was like, all right, well, I got to remix every other track now. Like, I took what he did. Like, I watched him do it and then I was like, okay, I'm going to do all 15 other tracks that way now too. So then I went back through and did it. And so the whole album sounds That might be the cleanest sounding one because I just don't have the amount of practice that he has at that method. But I could talk about that a little bit too, like what the method is. But like,
yeah.
So basically, the way that I mix this album.
Hold on 1 second. This mic is like sagging again, dude. I got this. So like, shout out to Bluet for sending me their PureTube mic. I love this mic, but it weighs like a freaking ton.
It's a brick.
Yeah, it's like as heavy as my car. I'm just like, I need to give this mic stand some Viagra or something. Keep it up. Just really struggling to stay up. Right, there we go. Last time I talked to you, you finished up helping Chris Lake with his studio, and you just started helping Mr. Bill with his studio, which you like converted an outdoor patio into like a proper room, which was really cool.
Right. So I helped Matt Davis help Chris Lake. I just want to make sure the lineage is
sure.
So, and then I came and I built Bill's studio. So as it stands right now, Matt, the same guy that I went out to LA with, he's just such a brilliant acoustician, and he did come in after I was done and help tune the room a little bit, which is always going to be a necessity.
Because I
focus more on like the structural aspects of things, like how to make the room tight, sealed, make it a sealed envelope. Like what components to use to make sure it doesn't fall over. Like that's really more what I'm worried about. That's just like, you know, construction basics. So we finished that. We finished his room. I want to say like right before last Christmas, it was starting to get cold. Or something like that. And we had all the treatments up on the wall. Bill came back from his trip, and it was like just ready to go. We just jammed out in there, like for like, you know, he just went into like production mode for the next like 3 or 4 months, like just hammering out his new album, which is going to come out soon. That album was mostly written, I think, in this room, which is kind of neat. Yeah, I think the hardest part of building that room was getting the clouds correct and hung, because it's a vaulted ceiling and we have one treatment and it has to hang from 1, 2, 3, 4 cables. There's another treatment behind it that also needs 4 cables, but it's tilted. So there's 8 mounting points in the ceiling that I had to nail because I didn't want like an extra hole in the drywall, because I'd like, and that drywall in the vault took me forever to get smooth. I had to like remember where I'd put the joists and the roof and where I'd put the rafter ties and everything. I remember that being a stressful day. And fun fact, I'll out myself here. I used to run the electric for the lights in the primary cloud. There was no way that I could run Romex or like shielded MC cable or anything down one of the wires without it looking horrible. So what I ended up doing is using an extension cord that runs into an outlet in the ceiling, right? So there's an extension cable that plugs into an outlet in the ceiling that you can't see. And there's an extension cable that runs down one of the cables that's like toward the front of the room that you can't see. So it's all hidden. And then it plugs into another outlet. Now, if you're following me, you'll notice that I've said extension cable and plugs into an outlet twice, which means that it is a male-to-male extension cable, which is so dangerous.
It doesn't sound ideal.
As long as you don't unplug it, it's fine. But like...
Sorry, Bill, that your studio burned down.
No. As long as it doesn't come unplugged, it's fine. That's like the last thing I need to go fix is like putting in like a permanent solution for power to that cloud. But hey, listen, it's worked great for years now.
That's good. Yeah. You know more about that than I do. So when it comes to like hanging a cloud, is there a perfect distance from like the ceiling? I guess are like most clouds standard, because essentially you're just adding another ceiling, right? That's like another layer of density to like absorb.
It really depends on the shape of the room that you are planning on finishing with. So in Bill's case, his ceiling is vaulted. What that means is it comes to a point, which is not ideal for control room acoustics. It's ideal for live room acoustics. If you're recording a piano, like a vaulted ceiling is great. You put some panels up there and it kind of adds a little bit of shimmer to the sound. That's fine. But when you have a control room, you want that thing to be dead, dead, dead. What you do with the cloud is you kind of want to bring, it's like you're, imagine you're bringing the ceiling down more toward like a normal 8-foot ceiling, right? Like, and so in my room here, it's 8-foot ceilings. Most rooms are, unless you live in like a newer home and sometimes it's like 10 feet or whatever. You like have a super nice home. It's a 12-foot, 16-foot ceiling. Well, I think what the calculations worked out to be is that we're trying to build what was called the Golden Trapagon, right? That was the name of the design that I decided to follow when I was building the room. And what that means is, I wish I could draw it and show the viewers, but basically the front of the room's a solid wall, back of the room is a solid wall, and then the sides, right? So front here, back here, the sides go like this a little bit, and the ceiling goes like this a little bit. So,
oh, that's weird.
So it's slanted. And basically, it turns the whole room into a horn, and it makes it harder for the sound coming from the speakers to come back to your ears, because it's not going into a 90-degree corner in any of the directions, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Except for the floor and the ceiling of the, no, just the floor of the back wall. So if you go look at his studio now on Instagram or whatever, you're going to see in some of his videos that there is just an ass load of treatment on the back wall. And a couple of those are tuned bass traps that Matt Davis designed and I built. And then a couple of the things are just like standard, really heavy bass traps. But the back wall of his studio turned out to be a real bitch and a half to treat, because it's not a standard interior wall. It's an interior wall built on an exterior wall. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Because it was a porch.
Yeah.
So it had some real weird resonances that I wasn't expecting to have to deal with, and neither was Matt. And so like we got to the tuning phase and like the fucking curves were looking so weird. Like, I mean, this was probably my like third or fourth room that I had like either tuned or helped tune. And it was my third room that I worked with Matt on. And I know his process, and I was able to watch him do this a couple times before. And he was looking at me like, bro, this is some weird, like what's going on here? And like, we were both kind of stumped on what exactly was going on, but we got it tamed, you know, now it's dead flat. So
what did he use to like tune the room? Did he use like a special microphone or like software?
I want to say he uses primarily Room EQ Wizard. So REW is the software. It's free, which is awesome.
That's my favorite price.
Yeah. So anybody out there who wants to tune your room, I think we talked about this last time too. Like the biggest investment you can make into your room would be to get a reasonable DAC and to get your speakers away from the wall, right? So get your speakers away from the wall and get a nice DAC. I could have plugged this, but I just sold it. Deer Creek Audio is a really awesome company that makes this little teeny tiny box called Mini DSP. And it has ins and outs, and you can flash a filter into the ROM chip of the Mini DSP. And then it sits basically between the output of your sound card and your speakers and applies a filter losslessly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really awesome. It's a great little utility DAC. It's very reasonably priced. And you can basically take Room EQ Wizard and have it run some smart analysis on your room. Similar to what SonarWorks does with headphones. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So
yeah, they have their own microphone too.
Oh, Mini DSP. Yeah. And it's calibrated.
Yeah.
Or are you talking about Room EQ Wizard?
I'm saying it's SonarWorks.
Yeah.
They have their own like mic for like tuning rooms. They sent all the Ableton certified trainers one. Mine's still sitting in my closet. I've never tried it.
I would encourage you to give it a shot. But again, if you're not really a headphones guy, what I'm trying to sell you on right now is the solution to that, but for speakers. So like if you want a passive EQ that sits between your sound card and speakers and just runs room correction, then that's the way to go. I used that in my last studio.
Nice.
It made a huge difference because that room was untamable.
I've had a lot of untamable places I've lived where I'm just like throwing up aimlessly. Like I have a couple of diffusers and then I've got a bunch of just foam and I'm just like walking around the room using my ear and trying to find the best place. But yeah, maybe one of these days I can encourage you to come to Denver if you ever get a break from your 72-hour work week.
Yeah.
And then we could just like chill, go in the mountains, and then I could pick your brain on making my stuff sound better.
I haven't been to Denver in a minute. I miss it. Now that Bill's here and Calvin's here, like those are the guys I was going out to Denver to go see. But now you're out there, so I can go see you. There you go.
So come hang out. We'll go. Yeah. I live right next to Red Rocks in the mountains, and you can meet my dog Roscoe. He's a total crackhead. He would love you. He would love you, dude. He's got puppy energy still.
Right on.
This episode is sponsored by Magic Mind. Honestly, I am obsessed with this stuff. I take it in the morning. I take it before a workout. I take it before I do a podcast now. It gives you all the mental clarity and focus you need without the anxiety of chugging coffee or any other energy products out there that are bad for you. You might be wondering, Dan, why would I need to spend my good hard-earned money on an energy drink? Well, it's not just like all the other crap out there. It contains 130 times the antioxidants of regular green tea. I actually gave a giant box of it to KMG Studios, where I'm doing in-person podcasts now, and the box didn't last long. A lot of the artists, a lot of the engineers love it there. One little shot gives you a perfect combo of nootropics, adaptogens, functional mushrooms, and includes ceremonial grade matcha, as they call it. It also can decrease inflammation, supports a healthy immune system. You can take it alongside your coffee or your tea if you're a coffee addict like myself, without giving you that extra jitter or making you feel anxious throughout the day. I can think more clearly. I can be a lot more productive whenever I take this little energy shot. Magic Mind is backed by over 240 scientific studies designed to boost energy, enhance focus, and create a sense of calmness and alertness. And it probably will be the best part of your morning ritual or any other moments where you need that extra boost of focus and memory and energy. Definitely check it out. I don't think you'll be disappointed. It actually tastes good too. Just go to magicmind.com/Ableton. Use the discount code Ableton20 in all caps. That's Ableton20 and save 20%. Highly recommend this stuff. I'll be taking it all the time. And yeah, I definitely recommend for you as well. So give it a try. Go to magicmind.com/Ableton. Check out the link in the show notes for more details.
Yeah, you worked with Bill on his studio. I saw pictures and him posting about it. It looks really nice. I'm sure that was definitely a learning experience.
Yeah.
Any other like learning curves through that process that like maybe were surprising to you?
I got sober halfway through it. That's a thing.
That's congrats, man. That's wonderful.
I'm still sober. Last time I was on your podcast, I was like freshly sober, but I'm still going, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You look happier and you have more energy.
Some of that might be the tea, but
that could be the tea, the caffeine, maybe.
It's gone. So some of that, some of it might be the tea, but no, they're generally, I feel a lot more positive. I'm off my meds as well. So it's not like a Zoloft joyfulness. It's like an actual joyfulness.
That's good. That's great, man.
But that is not to say that that medicine did not help my brain relearn that pattern, right? So that's the purpose of antidepressants, is to help your brain relearn how to make its own junk, right? Like, mm-hmm. Hey, doesn't this junk feel good? And your brain's like, oh yeah, that junk's pretty nice. And it's like, cool, now you try it, you know?
Yeah, man, everybody's brain's different. I've heard success and horror stories about antidepressants.
Oh yeah.
I think it depends on so many factors.
I don't want to make light of that. No.
Yeah, for sure. Outside of antidepressants, like, let's talk about your new album. You said that you got some help with like the mastering and mixing for that extra 10%, finishing them off. Maybe you could talk about some of those things that you learned in that process.
Yes.
Because I would be very curious.
Before I do that, may I go get a seltzer out of my fridge?
Dude, I'm going to actually do the same. Let's go get some drinks. So for everybody listening right now, here's what Gardner did as he was waiting for me to get back with my drink. And I think it's hilarious, so I'm going to leave it in the podcast. And I'm back.
Oh yeah.
Dude, you inspired me. I had to make some tea.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. It's organic tazo. I think it's tazo. Tazo chai.
Yes. Very good.
Big chai fan with a little bit of like oat milk, just a hint.
Okay. So the other day I had a client who was feeling some sort of way about the deck I had built him. Like, this is way, way above and beyond. He was giving me compliments. He's like, I got to make you some tea. Makes me the best matcha, like green tea latte I've ever had in my entire life. I finished it in like 35 seconds. I think wow. I burnt my throat. I was like, like, I was so good, dude.
Yeah, I mean, if tea is good enough to burn your tongue on, then like, sign me up.
It was worth it. He's like, I make another one for the road. And I was like, I don't need another one for the road.
You're like, I'm already cracked out. Dude, I'll send you some Magic Mind. They keep shipping some to me. They sponsor the podcast, but great company. And it's like the most high quality premium grade matcha you could buy. And they're like little shots, little matcha shots.
Oh, sick.
It has like nootropics like ashwagandha and like whatever, all this other stuff that I can't pronounce that's supposed to be really healthy and good for you.
Okay.
Definitely keeps me awake. I actually just took one because I was like about to fall asleep just now. So I just took a shot and I'm about to wake up in 5 minutes.
So it's, so it's just like caffeine. Like there's no other.
I think it naturally has caffeine because of the matcha, okay. But they don't add any caffeine. So I can drink it with my coffee and I'm like, I'm ready to go. Yeah. Mixing. So what did you learn in the process of this new album with the mixing? Cause it sounds good.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I learned how to use my meters and my numbers in ways that I didn't used to use them. So like I used to basically just like look at the peak meter on Ableton's master channel and be like, all right, everything's hitting this number that I'm looking for. And then I'd be like, cool. I'd go to the loudest section and I'd play it and be like, okay, the loudest section is hitting the right number, and then I'd print it. But what I've learned is that there's like a bunch of other numbers that I need to be concerned with as well.
Like what?
So I primarily used RX10 and
yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Insight?
No, just Isotope RX10.
Okay.
And the meter I'm using, like my live meter, is a physical meter in front of me. It's made by TC Electronic. It's their Clarity M.
Yeah, I know. I've seen those in a couple of people's studios.
That's what I use for live metering, like as it's happening. But then basically I'd get everything looking correct on that meter, and I'd get it looking correct in Limitless, which is the limiter that I've been using a lot. And then I would print it, and then I'd use Isotope RX10 to check, right? So like after you print it, so for instance, Limitless might be telling me that everything is peaking below zero decibels, like the sample peak level. It might, you know, using true peaking and everything. And then when I took it into RX10 and looked at the render, it actually wasn't, you know, peaking at zero or sometimes, you know, usually I was actually set it to -0.3 decibels is like, I think what my SPL was supposed to be. And I would look at it and it was actually over. It was actually peaking, clipping. But like you can't hear it, but the computer considers it, and Limitless wasn't reporting it. And so I'm like, it caused me to like start to look at the process of like, okay, I need this to sound good for my ears, but I also need the numbers to be correct. So like, it's not that I wasn't trusting my ears. What I was doing was I'd get it correct with my ears. And then I would like basically for the next several hours, just like tweak some things and print and tweak some things and print and check and tweak some things and print and check. Right. And when I say print, I mean like render, like I'd render it down and then check my numbers and check my numbers and check my numbers. Until I got everything to sit at like the arbitrary number that I decided was going to be the correct, you know, max momentary loudness, max short-term loudness, and integrated loudness. Like those are the three numbers I was really focused on. And once I got those all to be like about the same per track, again, basically using I Was Wrong, Bill's mix and master as the template, then I was like, okay, well, this track is now mixed correctly. And I would send it to a couple of people and see what they thought, and they would give me feedback. The most consistent feedback that I got from people was that it was missing low mids. I kept neglecting low mids. So then I'd take that feedback and put it into the track. And of course, then all the numbers would be off again. So that I'd go through the process again.
Yeah. The joys of mixing, right? Yeah. Like, I was going to say, like, what lufs were you hitting? Were you like trying to hit a certain amount of loudness? Like, what were those numbers?
Yeah. So let me just pull this up real quick. I can tell you. So I was trying to get between -7 integrated and -10 integrated lufs.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then
it's a little quieter than I was expecting.
Yeah. Well, see, the thing is, regardless of what you decide is your, what you decide the lufs is that you're going to put into the song, Spotify normalizes it to -14 anyway. All I'm trying to do is to get it sound as good as I can on my end and make sure that it's not peaking so that they don't have to run whatever black box peaking software they use to do that. So all basically I want to take all the work out of their hands except for their little normalization process that they do to get their tracks to sound and at -14. But my tracks, I checked them with a couple meters. Doing it this way, so I'll go and play like a tune or two, you know, through the Clarity M, and it'll say, you know, the true peak max is like -14, and then I'll play my tracks, and then my true peak max is like -13, and I'm like, hell yeah, I got one more luff on them.
Nice.
So yeah, it paid off.
I think there's a website called loudnesspenalty.com. I think you can basically go there, loudnesspenalty.com, and you just upload your wave or your track. And then it'll basically give you a readout of what that's going to look like. And if you have any, like, if it has concerns for certain, like, streaming platforms like YouTube or Spotify or whatever. So it gives you, like, a score, basically, for each platform and lets you know, like, hey, this might be too loud or whatever for each streaming platform.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've heard both ways. I've also talked to, like, a couple mastering engineers who are, like, absolute real, like, OGs in LA working with some of the biggest platinum artists and mastering. And I've heard some of them say like that, honestly, they don't really factor in too much with the streaming services. They're just like, we hit it as loud as we can to make it sound still good. Unless it's for some kind of like streaming platform for film or TV or something where there's like a specific standard you have to go by. They're kind of like, we just make it sound good and make it loud and we just upload it everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't know. You could definitely get as picky as you want to be about that. I'm just slamming my stuff into the red and then letting Ableton's built-in clipper or limiter or whatever's going on the back end. When I export it, it's going to chop it at zero.
Yeah, which is fine. I mean, I know guys that'll put like two camel fats on the end of a chain and just send it. And it's like, sounds great. Like, so
yeah,
I don't really... I'm not saying my way is the best. I'm just saying that's the way I did it this time. And it worked. I like the way it came out, and I'm proud of how it sounds.
I'll have to check out Limitless. I am not too familiar with that. It's by DGM Audio, right? That's that limiter.
Yeah. And I saw Limitless and I saw its price tag and I was like, all right, fucking no way. Fucking
oh, really?
This is bullshit. There's no way it sounds that. And then like basically like Bill snapped it on the track and all of a sudden, all these little background details that I'd been missing started to pop out of the mix. And I was like, all right, I'll fucking buy it. I was like, son of a bitch.
Like, Bill should be getting royalties from them.
Yeah. Right now. And I don't know. I'm pretty cautious about recommending plugins because I definitely think I've been a victim of snake oil salesman before. I can recommend Limitless. It's a great limiter, but that's all it is. It's just a limiter. It's a very good digital limiter.
Yeah. I'm a Pro L junkie. I feel like I use several of those in my tracks.
I love Pro L. I used to use exclusively Pro L for limiting until I started using Limitless. I found that Pro L does eat the transients a little bit. When I would like things to be a bit more snappy, and I did some side by sides, and I'd be willing to share that with you.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because I mean, really, I was a Pro L evangelist. I was like, this thing is the shit. Yeah. Because here's the thing: you can slam anything through Pro L, and it'll make it sound like it'll take the harshness away. It does. Mm. But the thing about a drum set, which you know, is like the harshness is intrinsic to the noise. So, like, if you're removing character from the sound, then that's not good, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like Limitless allows me to slam things through it, but also it preserves the character of the noise, and it does a little bit less of that. It does a little bit less shaping.
Every plugin's going to have a sound, right? Like
even if it's
a transparent marketed plugin, you know, it's still going to have a sound.
Absolutely.
So
Limitless has a wide and kind of sparkly sound, like that. Yeah. That's how I would describe it.
I like sparkly.
Yeah, those high end kind of fuzzy sparklies. It does that really well.
Yeah, I'm into that. I don't know if you've played with Gullfoss. I think I've mentioned it like twice on the podcast. Uh-uh. I like Gullfoss. They have like a Gullfoss EQ, which basically just like reads like the dynamics and like the EQ and the frequencies of what's being played real time and adjusts it real time. They have like an EQ one that you can use. Like for instance, I had a bass guitar that I wanted to distort and make it pop out as a lead in like a fill. And I just couldn't get it bright enough and dirty enough and tight enough. And so I used Gullfoss EQ on it and it was just perfect. Like it sounded what I wanted to do. And
then there's a mass,
Gullfoss. But then they have a mastering plugin. It's for your master. And then I usually put that like right before the limiter. So usually I'll like DS and then I'll go into that. And then I find that it's so subtle. It's just very subtle. It's not like a big like, wow. It's more kind of like I just need stuff a little tighter and brighter. But it's got like multiple mode. Like you can adjust like how dynamic it is. You can like add back in your mix is sounding thin. You can bring some life back to it, or you could tighten it
if it's
like too resonant in some places.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it's like a more chilled out, subtle version of Soothe, kind of.
All right. Yeah. I abused Soothe on this mix.
Yeah. Soothe is amazing, dude. Yeah. Honestly, for anybody who's on the road, who's like trying to produce on the road or like mix down for like live performance and they just don't have a proper studio setup, like Soothe is a game changer. You can just clean stuff up and prevent people's ears from bleeding for quick mix downs.
Yeah.
If you have a quick mix down you need.
Truth. So where were we? Right. So that was the mastering process and looking at loudness. But the way I actually mixed the tracks was I mixed them all in Ableton regardless of which program I made them in, because about half the tracks on this album are written in Bitwig. So,
oh yeah, I forgot you're a big Bitwig person.
I switched over officially to Bitwig. So, but I mixed them all in Ableton because that's what I watched Bill do it in. I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to mix them in Bitwig because he didn't use Bitwig. And I think I might actually continue to mix things in Ableton because
really,
it makes a little bit more sense. And I'm not sure if I'm just like, if that's a habit thing, like I'm just used to doing it that way. So I'll just keep doing it in Ableton. But like,
yeah.
I definitely think I'm going to be a switch hitter. Like I'll use both. Like,
it's funny because I feel like Ableton gets a lot of criticism from people who love to mix because everything is just like laid out left to right on a track insert. As of like Pro Tools or Logic, like you have more of like a stackable kind of plug-in window option.
I have zero experience with Logic and Pro Tools, none. So I know how to do mixes on is Ableton.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I use Ableton Live for mixing too. So
yeah. So what I would do is I'd stem everything down to like 10 channels. I do like drums, bus, basses, synths, and like I had like 10 or so like standard groups of tracks. Like, so I'd take the track, which would end up being like 100, 120 tracks. I'd bust it all down to like 10. I'd render them and I'd put that into a new session. And I'd basically have that be like the mix session. And I would edit them and remove tails. And so there was a lot of editing. Like if this was a traditional like editing process, there would have been like little edits of tape all over the floor because I was removing the extra resonance. There's not the extra resonance, like the extra reverb tails, because I don't want the computer to consider it. You know, it's like I was going in and like checkerboarding the song again. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like further cleaning it up. Like when you wash rice, that's what it felt like. I was like, the fourth time you wash rice, you're like, is this even doing anything? But like, that's what was going on. Like, I was like, I don't even know if this is doing anything, but that's what Bill did. So that's what I'm going to do. And like,
yeah.
But the cool part is several songs at that stage changed because I had them in stem form and I wasn't thinking about Vital or Serum or whatever. I was just thinking about the sound, And I was able to use, which I use this technique quite a lot in this album, is a control shift and then dragging the waveform around in the clip region. You know that trick?
Oh yeah, yeah, that's really nice.
Yeah, yeah, so several times I would like just fuck around with one of the main sounds, and I would like shift it a little bit to the left, and I was like, oh, it sounds way tighter, and I would just like leave it. I was like, that's how the track is now.
Oh, nice.
Several tracks have like a premix that doesn't sound like the master at all. Like it's like a different song.
The waveform a little. Yeah, I don't know. I love step mixing, man.
Yeah.
Honestly, I much rather prefer working with just audio tracks and just mixing down that way.
You can't get it that tight any other way.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice, and like obviously your computer's probably going to be a lot happier if you're not running a bunch of VSTs and stuff too. So like, you know, there's that factor, especially with like side chaining. If you have a bunch of stuff routed into other stuff, your computer's going to have to be thinking a little bit extra hard. It's going to probably affect maybe some of the timing of some stuff on like a micro level.
Yeah.
Computer might going to have, it's going to have to process a little harder. It's going to sweat a little more. I don't know. There's just something nice and pretty aesthetically about working with audio too. Just being able to see the waveform. That's something that's really nice with Live 12, actually, is like it has a waveform zoom option now. So you can like zoom in really close, really quickly on audio clips and see the waveform.
Sick. I have to admit that I've been so in the weeds with things, I haven't looked at Live 12 yet.
It's pretty sick, man. There's things I hate about it and there's things I love.
Yeah.
It's definitely a love-hate relationship. I think there's like cool ideas. I also think it's getting to a point where it's like some of the updates were more of like a bonus rather than a necessity that actually kind of inconvenienced things.
Huh.
So like I've mentioned this on the podcast, but like if you hit Command Option R, like it should hide the return tracks.
Right.
It doesn't do that. It doesn't do that anymore. You have to like manually go into like your view settings and then go into arrangement track controls and then hide specific things that way. So they got rid of shortcuts and they changed some of the shortcuts. I guess you can always relearn that, but it's just kind of like, why do we need to keep changing the shortcuts, guys?
So in Bitwig, you can make the shortcuts whatever you want.
See, that's awesome, dude. Like that's the move.
Like a video game. Like you've been able to do your own key bindings in video games for fucking two decades. Why can't we do that in Ableton?
Yeah, 100%. You could probably remap the whole thing in BOMs if you wanted to. Maybe BOMs MIDI translator. You might be able to get away with that.
That'd be sick.
It'll take a while.
Yeah.
But there are like really cool new features, like the, you know, being able to see your mixer controls and arrangement view and toggle that real fast is really nice. Like that. A lot of other things. Yeah, I did a whole episode on it. Anyway, back to you. So you talked about like you really love the Limitless plugin. That was kind of a nice new bonus thing for you with the limiter, like learning like your process, like you produce in Bitwig, you stemmed it out, mixed in Ableton.
Yeah, and so some tracks, I mean, again, it's pretty much a 50-50 split. 50% of them came from Ableton, 50% of them came from Bitwig. And at this point, it's funny, if I listen to the album, I can't tell which is a good sign. The creative process and the way that I did everything was very much like mirroring the guys that I've been working with, like people I've been watching, because I haven't released a dance record since 2014. Like I've done ambient music and I've done like some pop stuff that was kind of weird, but I haven't put out like a dance album like of like EDM like this in 10 years. So all these other guys I've been working with, like John Curry and Matt Davis and Sean and Bill and, you know, Nolan Frequent, like watching these guys, how they produce, I've been just kind of copying that, like the checkerboarding thing and the way that the sound kind of gets into the computer starts over here. Like with the modular, I'm motioning over here to my modular. I start off like fucking around, making some cool loops and grooves over here. And then that gets recorded into the computer. And then I basically like iterate over and over and over again, like change something about it, add a plugin, print it down, change something about it, add a plugin, print it down, and just keep going in layers and layers and layers. And like, you know, by the time it hits the final version, you can't tell it came from the modular. So it doesn't really matter that I came from here, which has been really good for me to figure out, because I'm starting to sell off some of my modules and just kind of parting ways with that aspect of my creative process. And I'm like, you know, it doesn't really matter where the sound comes from, because by the 10th time I've iterated, it's just a bunch of noise.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's true. Like, at some point, if you're really into that experimental sound design, you're just going to keep processing stuff. It's not like everybody's like, ooh, that's a Moog. You know, ooh. Like, it's... Yeah, they're just like, that sounds fat and nice. That's all people are really knowing, you know?
Ooh, that's a Dreadbox Antiphon that he probably built himself.
With erosion and saturator and a glue compressor and all those
other, yeah. Yeah, but, yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I feel like this album is far more me playing with noise instead of like worrying about music. So like,
yeah,
I very much like I did an entire course for you with theory. So like, I've always been like,
you did.
Yeah. I've always been like, yeah. All right, counterpoint, you know, and I'll do my counterpoint thing. And then I'll do my best to make it fit EDM. Whereas this time I was like way more focused on the end result of making like a slamming dance tune. And I was just like, what does the noise sound like? And like, I would shape it and saturate it. And I think I put saturator at least once on everything. Like just saturator on everything.
Yeah, honestly, same. Like, saturator is still probably my favorite saturator device or plugin out there.
It's OP. Like that. Yeah. It's like Ableton devices I was constantly using were saturator, glue compressor. And I have it written down here, channel EQ.
I feel like channel EQ gets slept on. It's a nice, and it's dynamic too. Like, it's what's the word, where it basically reads the incoming signal and adapts to it. So it's an adaptive EQ or whatever.
You can boost. It does a really good job of boosting low mids.
Yeah.
So I have this. I have this preset. Because Steam Heat was the first song I mixed. That's the one you like. And I sent it to my friend George. And I said, George, what's missing? Like, what do you think? Do you like this? And he was like, oh, it's very clean. It's missing like the low mids. And he's like, it's the missing the meat. So he created an EQ preset for me called Steam Meat. And I ended up putting that on everything.
Just steamy meat on the whole mix.
Yeah.
Is that how you inspired the track, the Steam track name? Is that what that came from?
No, that just came from the concept of the album, which is about a giant bird. A giant mechanical bird made steampunky stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah, see, if you listen to the track, you can hear the that's the...
Yeah, yeah.
Those are the pistons.
Nice. Mechanic. Yeah, because that tracks with the visuals too that you posted on Instagram.
Yeah. When the album comes out on the 21st, either on the 21st or shortly thereafter, my 3D artist Church Grimm and I are going to have a visual experience. So like, people will be able to go to my YouTube channel and they'll be able to click on the visual experience and watch about 60% of the album, like visually. It'll choreographed 3D rendered stuff. We put out two music videos. They didn't do so well. I'm like, not super bummed about it, but because like I did it how I wanted to do it. Like, I was like, it's got to look this way. I don't care what happens. And I'm real proud of it. So
that's cool, man.
Two music videos that are already out there. I Was Wrong is like one of the best, because I didn't do the 3D rendering. Like, this other guy named Church Grimm did it. Huge shout out to him. And it's seriously one of the coolest things. It's such a cool video. Like, he did such a good job on that rendering.
I don't know if I've seen the whole thing. I saw the promo snippet you posted on Instagram of that.
Yeah, it's out. So go check it out, I suppose.
I'm gonna need to check that out.
The visual experience will be all the collaborators. So all the songs that have a collaborator are gonna be in the visual experience.
That's awesome. I don't know. Would you be open if I remixed one of those tracks?
100%.
I was listening to a couple of them. I was like, I can totally play with this. This would be fun. This is a good track. Yeah.
I definitely think that there's, because I did a remix album for my last ambient thing. So like I've already set that precedent. So I've had a couple people reach out and be like, hey, can I remix this? And so yes, 100%. Let's go.
Yeah.
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 I've already got the stems.
I feel like I've seen more remix albums in the last couple of years than ever.
It's fun.
Yeah, and it's a really great way to get additional exposure as an artist. If you put all this effort and all this time and money or energy or whatever into like releasing an album, you can kind of prolong the life of that album if you have other people remixing it, or you release a remix album, you know, and that gives you more live stuff to play out if you did want to perform live too. You know, you get more material and stuff that a lot of people probably haven't heard of.
Yeah.
Of the original.
Yeah, I think the Virtual Riot remix of one of Bill's last albums is like killing it right now too. It's like, I can't remember what, I think it was, I don't think it was Complicated, but anyway.
Yeah. Sorry, my dog's barking. Roscoe. Every time the neighbor opens their door, because they're like across the stairwell from us, like, he just thinks somebody's about to break down our door in this really safe neighborhood I live in. Yeah, no, he's got a hard life. His life is so hard. What was I going to say? I was going to say something. I forget. Do you have any interest in like performing live? I mean, you mentioned this is the first like dance album you made in a while. I didn't know if there was an intention behind that.
No, I literally, like, if it does pop off, I would literally hire somebody else to go be me. I'm done, man. I don't want to perform. I don't want to leave my house and leave my family. And
yeah.
And like, I've been to a show recently and I was like fucking walking with a cane the next day. Like, I can't do this anymore.
Like, it's way past your bedtime.
It was way past my bedtime. And I don't do drugs and I don't drink. So it's like there's no reason for me to be there. You know? So like,
yeah. Dude, I'm at the age now where like I appreciate my pillow more than ever.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, if you did, I would totally come see you play live. That'd be sweet.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I think there's potential for me to like do a couple of shows, but it would really be like one odd weekend at the Terminal West in Atlanta, like that one venue I like here, and that's it.
Yeah, I haven't been there, but I've heard good things about that place.
Yeah, it's the staff is great and they're great and it's a good venue.
I don't know. I feel like in the world of live production, I feel like you could do so much because you have a really strong background in construction and just like production and all these different things. I feel like you could totally build some really killer like stage setup or like a set or something. If you ever were interested, I feel like that you would definitely be amazing at something like that, doing production setup.
I would love to do set design and production and construction for somebody else. I would love that. But
yeah.
I think if I did that for me, it would never get finished. It would be so over budget. My wife would leave me. Like, it would be a bad idea. Like,
yeah.
And it would be cool looking when it's done, but
yeah,
you know, it's the amount of effort it would take to get to a product that I'd be happy with. Like, it took me 5 years to make this album. Like, that's too long. Like,
yeah, it's a long time.
It's a long time. And long time. There's a certain amount of like pickiness that I just can't get out of my system. I'm still grappling with that. Like, I don't, the idea of promoting a song, the idea of promoting a release, like sometimes will like stop me from making the thing, right? So I think if I was doing like a live production, like it would never get off the ground. It would never, nobody ever see it.
What's after this? Like, do you have anything you're thinking after this album release that you have in the works that you're working on?
Yes. So I want to do another, I want to do another hip hop mixtape. So Whitey McWhiterson was successful. So I'm going to do Whitey 2.
That'd be cool.
Like I said, I'm selling off a lot of my hardware to make room for my first love, which is my bass, which is over here, my upright. Kind of like, you know, how like Emily the harpist has her like pedals that she runs her harp through. Mm-hmm. I want to do that, but like with my bass. So I'm trying to make some room in the studio for like, you know, to get my string instruments back out and get the sitar in here and get my guitar out more. And so I have a side project called No Effort. It was a lo-fi EP that I put out, and that did pretty well. It got playlisted on a couple of the bigger lo-fi playlists. But I want to do a second one, but like more upright bass, more of those like saccharin ahs and oohs that I put on stuff.
I think that's cool.
Just put the dance music out and then take a break from the dance music.
Yeah, I've been definitely into more of like the hip hop sampling Whitey McWhiterson kind of vibes, I guess.
Hell
like
yeah.
I've been loving that kind of stuff lately and playing more with that. Or do you know Orville Klein? This is kind of random.
I think I heard the podcast you had him on.
Yeah, dude, he's brilliant. He's like one of the OG Ableton certified trainers in Chicago. He posted a video the other day about how to generate your own like hip hop vocal samples. Yeah.
You guys broke the news about Push 3, I think.
We did.
Yes. I remember that podcast.
Nice. I mean, I love Orville. Shout out to that guy. He's got some really great like Ableton tips and tricks, and he hosts workshops regularly in Chicago. He posted like an Instagram video recently of how to use this AI site called fakeyou.com. Have you heard of it?
Uh-uh.
Yeah, I haven't played with it, but you basically just record like in Ableton or wherever, like a phrase or a vocal to like a tempo of whatever you want. And then you just like export it, upload it to the site. It does like a voice to voice kind of like conversion.
Oh, wait, is this the site where you can choose like Drake or Kanye or?
Yeah, so it has like a growing archive of all these different artists. It takes your exact recording and it basically swaps out your voice for their voice.
Does it work well?
It was surprisingly good. From the video he shared that I saw, I was like I could totally, if I needed some like hip hop vocals, he did it like one with 50 Cent and it sounded just like 50 Cent and it was the same tempo and like similar pitch of his voice, but like just more 50 Cent, like a little lower pitch. Yeah.
You got me pulling the sticky notes out, man. I wrote it down. I'm good.
Have you played with any kind of AI related stuff at all?
So Bill's got his thing that he put out with Datamind and Inkanti. I'm kind of in their circle with that stuff. And also I've seen some of the cool things that Ben Jordan's been using AI to do. Like, have I messed with it personally? No, I've been like watching over shoulders and being like, oh, what are you guys doing? Okay. All right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's my relationship with it. It's very much like it's cursory. You know, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a whole new world, man. I don't think it's ever going to replace like artists or producers, because I think people always want that human element, and like it's just a model building off of something that already exists. So like people are going to still want like original creativity, I think, when it comes to music production.
Yeah.
It's got some really cool shortcuts and hacks I think producers can use right now and in the near future. I know Bill's talked about dance diffusion quite a bit.
I remember that was part of the studio build saga, was him working on getting all of his GPUs to like talk to one another so that he could process more dance diffusion iterations and stuff like that. So yeah. I remember like watching that happen, but I never got a chance to like fuck with it. The thing I've been using AI for is like aleatoric stuff. So a lot of my music still has like kind of an aleatoric sort of chance operation thing where it's like, okay, there's an A and a B, which one is it? Let's roll some dice. Right. So, every once in a while I'll ask ChatGPT, which I use that a lot. I use it like Google now.
Oh, me too, man. Same.
And I'll ask it like, hey, of these two options, which one would be more effective for this? And then, like, I'll have it like help me make decisions like that. Like kind of like how I used to ask chat like during a production session on Twitch. Like I'd be like, hey, this isn't it good? And people would be like, no, it's not. I'm like, cool. Delete.
Yeah, I mean that's subjective though too, right? Somebody probably is actually gonna think something that those people thought was junk is actually like the best thing ever too, you know.
Yeah.
So, have you played with the GPT store? It's actually pretty wild with how many people are now like creating and uploading their own GPTs in the OpenAI store.
What? No, I haven't.
Yeah, they have. So you have to pay for it. I think you have to do like the plus plan or whatever it's called. It's like $20 a month right now.
All right.
But you can access all kinds of stuff. Like you can say, I want you to analyze this big spreadsheet and give me a quick summary on what it means. Or you could, like I had it write a non-disclosure agreement for me for this new project I'm working on.
Cool.
And yeah, there's all kinds of different stuff. Like I had one transcribe all of my podcast episodes.
Cool.
So it's pretty wild. And there's like, I saw or read an article, I haven't really looked into it, but there's another marketplace of GPT apps called Flow GPT, which apparently is like the more open sourced version of ChatGPT or OpenAI. Yeah, I want to play that with that more. So Flow GPT is supposed to be like a bigger kind of like crowd sourced type of marketplace for like AI bots of different types. That one's interesting too. I need to check that out.
Sick.
And the future's now.
It just keeps walking forward.
Yeah. Did you hear about that Denzel? I mean, Tom Hanks. Some like medical company, like a smaller medical company, basically used him to endorse their product. It was like a deep fake of him. As like a commercial.
No.
Yeah. And then like somebody saw it and like sent it to him or something. And he's like, I didn't do that. And then it was like a big lawsuit.
No, but I do remember the Taylor Swift involuntary AI porn. That was a big thing. Nobody needs that, right?
Yeah, man, that's messed up.
It's, I mean, I'm just saying nobody needs it because it's already out there. So subscribe to my Pornhub.
No, I did see in like an article, some guy was actually creating fake girl that he was generating pictures and videos of a fake person. He was doing it for OnlyFans.
That's genius.
Yeah. I was like, honestly, dude, I respect that hustle. Like,
that's fucking genius.
He's making money off of a fake person people think is real on OnlyFans.
Dude,
he's making several thousand a month. Yeah, brands are using that. There's like several brands that are creating virtual influencers, and they have like a team that's creating these fake influencers. Yeah, there's like several companies are doing that and just like growing a big fan base off of a fake person to endorse their product, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. The influencer market needs competition.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of a weird concept. Like, if you're like on the other side of that and you're connecting to this person that's not real, like, what is reality at that point? It's strange.
It is no different than Tony the fucking Tiger selling you Frosted Flakes. It's no different. There's no spokesperson for Frosted Flakes. It's Tony the Tiger.
Yeah.
But then people are like, oh, but then there's the guy who does Tony's voice, and there's the guy who draws Tony, and there's the... Okay. Do you know those guys? You don't.
That's a good point. I did like Tony the Tiger. I ate a lot of Frosted Flakes growing up.
They're great.
They were great.
Dude, have you ever seen Prongles?
No.
All right. So it's a real product. It is Target's knockoff of Pringles. Okay. I want everyone listening to look up Prongles. It is some of the best marketing ever. So everybody knows Pringles. Once you pop, the fun don't stop, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Prongles is a skateboarding pig, and it says, once you pop, that's great.
I'm looking at this right now. Yep. That's hilarious.
Once you pop, that's great. We say that around my house all the time. We'll just be like, oh, that's great.
It doesn't even rhyme. They didn't put that much effort into that tagline at all. They're like, no, we're just gonna take this idea and be lazy with it.
Yeah, man. There you go.
Yeah. What are the benefits and disadvantages in your mind of producing in Bitwig versus Ableton?
They don't stand out much as different programs if you're doing the kind of music that I wrote. Right. So if you're doing and I think that is proven by the fact that even I have a hard time remembering which was written in which. Okay. And I've got a pretty good memory. So where it does make a difference is something like ambient music. So my next ambient album is going to be produced in Bitwig because it will allow me to use a whole bunch of Bitwig has attachment points and modulation points in every single plugin natively. So instead of using like LFO or like an envelope utility or whatever that's written in Max for Live, in Bitwig, just natively on every single plugin, even third-party plugins, it's got two or three buttons right here that open a list of modulators, like a whole like robust list of modulators, and you can assign them to any value in or out, and you can assign them to specifically in or out and like effects out. So like every single plugin has an effects out that you can apply effects just to that plugin in the chain. It doesn't affect anything else in the chain. It's like it allows you to get like, it kind of allows you to open the hood a little bit on the DAW. So, you can really make it do some insane shit. I could make an entire track in one channel, basically. Like I could set it. I could set up an entire channel as a modular and make a track, like using sampler or something. Yeah, which I think I could probably do that in Ableton as well, but it would take a lot of wrangling and it wouldn't make a lot of intuitive sense. The thing about Bitwig is doing that would make a lot of intuitive sense. Because like once I show you how to click a couple of buttons to open some of these sub menus, you're like, oh, okay. And you can connect the dots real quick. Like it didn't take me long at all to understand how that works. Yeah. And it's got one plugin, which is like a macro plugin called The Grid. And it's essentially like Reactor. You know how Reactor works, or even how it would be like a Max for Live patch, but like a more macro Max for Live patch where things are already kind of pre-built for you, like an oscillator and stuff like that, instead of having to like, you know, go into the fucking pure data, you know, nuts and bolts of it and get everything working. So there's that. It also has bounce in place and like bounce down to new track as commands, and they can take place while you're editing. So it's got a render queue. So like you can like highlight a region and, you know, you hit, I think it's Control B or Control Shift B, and it'll render that region that you selected to a new channel, or render it in place, or consolidate it in place.
Got it.
It's like bouncing in place and stuff like that is really useful for my process because I iterate like that. But
yeah, I did the same thing a lot. Yeah, I use bounce in place Max for Live all the time for that.
Oh, I love BIP. I mean, it's on my master in every Ableton track.
Me too.
It's great. I think where it struggles is getting things to sound as clean in Bitwig feels to me harder than it is in Ableton. And again, that might be a comfortability thing, but I feel like it's harder for me to get Bitwig to do specific numbers. Like for instance, if I want to change the track volume in Ableton, I just click on the volume slider on the right side of the page, and I type in a number. I hit enter, I'm done. Right? Well, in Bitwig, it's like a triple click or a control click, and then you type in the number. And for whatever weird reason, like every new channel is negative 10 decibels instead of zero. Like, so like, I'm pretty sure there's probably some defaults there's things like that are kind of small stumbling blocks for me still. And I've been using the program now for 4 years. So like, that shouldn't feel so alien and foreign to me, but it still does.
Maybe that's their way of just assuming you're trying to like gain stage as you're producing or something weird like that.
I mean, the headroom's nice.
Yeah.
Sometimes, but then other times I'm like, why is this drum so quiet? And I'm like, oh right, the channel's negative 10. Like,
that's weird. It seems like a lot. Like it's minus 10 dB.
Yeah,
interesting.
Routing audio isn't as intuitive in Bitwig. So like I feel like when I record my modular, it's easier for me to record in Ableton than it is in Bitwig. But I'm slowly getting over that hump as I'm learning. Like, so in Bitwig, they really want you to use the hardware instrument like plugin, and not like, you know, because what I want to do is what I do in Ableton, where I just enable the external in on the channel and then I record the audio, right? I set my loop braces and I record because I'm old. I want to see the tape. You know what I mean? But in Bitwig, they don't want me to do that. They want me to use the hardware instrument and set up like the dedicated ins and outs and stuff. And it fucks with my RME, and I'm like, ugh. So it just, getting started sometimes feels more frustrating in Bitwig. But once I'm flowing and I'm like bouncing in place and like clicking and doing my little hacker thing with the mouse and keyboard, Bitwig feels faster at that point. But like familiarity, getting started, it's a little bit on the intuitive side with recording, Ableton's got it in spades.
Interesting.
Like I said, I think I'm still use both. Like, I mean, sometimes I wake up and I'm like, I don't want lemon lime seltzer today. I want grapefruit, you know?
Yeah, there's, when it comes to like crazy intense routing, I forget who it was, but somebody told me about this Max for Live device that like lets you do pretty much like virtual routing inside of Live and outside of Live. I think it's called Audio Routes.
Oh, my sound card would love that.
I think Cycling 74 released it. It's like multi-channel routing and Live.
But if you need to do crazy routing, like it, yeah, it's a Max for Live. It's called Audio Routes. I don't know. Talking about weird routing.
Have you heard of Rolling Sampler?
No.
Check out Rolling Sampler. It's a VST. And what it does is it just like, it's almost, what's that listening functionality that Live has where it's just always listening and you can like go back into your history?
By birds? Is it by birds?
Birds things, yeah.
Sorry, I was like, I was too busy Googling. What did you say?
Now, what's that functionality in Live where it's always listening to like the last like 30 seconds to a minute of whatever the hell you were doing?
Capture?
Yeah, capture. So it's that. It's capture, but it's for whatever channel you stick it on, and it's always at the top of your screen, and you can see the waveform. It's like basically, it's dirty, dude. It's like, I feel like that was like the Matrix, like when I was like, oh, fucking, this is going to unlock some shit for me.
So capture is only MIDI. It would have been nice if they added an audio or MIDI function.
Yeah, so this is an audio version of capture.
Yeah, it is. I'm looking at it right now. That's kind of cool.
300% worth the money.
$19.
300% worth it.
Take my money.
Yeah, rolling sample is a game changer. And then it just sits at the top of the screen, and it's got a waveform. You can set it to rainbows and shit. If you hit spacebar and like, you know, some cool shit happens and you're like, oh, I wasn't recording. Yeah, you were.
Is it a Max for Life thing or is this a VST?
VST? Like... VST 3.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of cool.
I wasn't recording that damn. Yes, you were.
Why not? It can't be that hard to integrate that. I mean, you have capture MIDI. Why don't you just apply it to audio?
No, it just reserves a RAM buffer. And like, you know, assuming your computer's got the headroom for it, it's just always there.
Rolling. I'm going to add that to my notes. It's my turn to write down some things.
Ah.
Rolling Sampler by Birds Things. What a great name.
Right? I don't know the guy. I'm not affiliated with the guy. I have no idea. This is dope. A great plugin.
You must love birds.
Yeah, and Lila's not with us anymore.
I know, dude. I'm sorry. She was so great. I definitely missed seeing her.
Cool bird.
Dude, she was great, man.
She's
great.
She's doing well wherever she is, I guarantee it.
Would you say that's like the most exotic pet you've ever had growing up?
Yeah, for sure. We had a dog when I was a kid. We had a mastiff. That's pretty exotic, but
like, those are big. Those are huge.
But I mean, I'm 6'5", and I'm the short one in my family. So like for us, it was just a normal dog.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
We were just like, oh. A dog.
Have you ever heard of a Caucasian shepherd dog, also known as like the Russian bear dog? Have you heard of those?
No, I'm going to look that up right now.
Russian bear dog. Those are supposed to, I think, be the biggest dogs in the world, maybe.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they're huge, dude. These things are so massive.
Whoa.
Yeah, they're crazy.
These things live for like 3 minutes?
Yeah, I was going to say, they probably don't live too long because they're so big. Yeah, they're a good size.
Oh, yeah. They live for 5.4 years on average. Oh.
Between 99 and 170 pounds. That's more than I weigh, dude.
Oh,
that's
my
crazy.
God.
That's a big boy. They actually are not legal. I don't think they're legal in the U.S.
Oh, wow.
Because they're so big. I don't know if they're aggressive or not.
They are. But they are banned in Denmark and subject to restrictions in Russia.
Wow. Yeah, nobody's going to break into your house if you got one of these just chilling at your front door.
That's a fucking horse.
You could ride one for sure.
Easily.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big boy.
Wow.
They're pretty cute, though. I bet they shed a lot. Maybe I'll get a companion for Roscoe. You want a Russian bear dog, brother?
It'll eat your dog.
I think I have enough room in my place for one.
Yeah, no kidding.
Crazy. Yeah, maybe that should be your next pet, dude. Get one of those.
Nah, pass. We my wife and I have decided that we're just not gonna do pets.
Yeah.
We don't have the time. Like we have
it's a lot of responsibility for
we
sure.
Have two children that
makes sense. Well, man, dude, thank you so much for hanging out on the podcast. Like it's always good seeing your face for sure. And anything else about the album or projects that you want to plug and talk to people about?
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure. I love being on this podcast.
Dude, is this the second or third time?
I think it's the second time.
Maybe okay. Well, there will be a third. We'll definitely have you back.
The album comes out on the 21st. If you want to see the tracks that I've already released, they are available on my YouTube channel as music videos. Church Grimm and I worked very hard on them. Go check them out.
Yeah, they're already out, right? So I'll put out links in the show notes so people can click that. So everybody check out the show notes for links to Gardner's stuff. This episode's going to drop on the 12th. So that'll be exactly 1 week after Live 12 comes out.
That's good numerology. It'll come out on the 12th and my album comes out on the 21st. It's the inversion.
Yeah, it's meant to be.
Hell yeah.
It's a sign that everybody needs to go stream it. Good to see your face, brother. Glad that you are doing well and like crushing it and doing construction stuff and, you know, still grinding and still making time for music. You know, it's good therapy, right?
Hell yeah, dude. Likewise. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. Everybody check out links in the show notes and give Gardner a follow. Bye-bye. Okay. Stop. Stop. Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to the podcast. Do me a huge favor if you would and hit that follow or subscribe button wherever you're listening to the podcast. If you don't hate the podcast, please leave a 5-star review. It would help me out a ton. Don't forget to check back on Tuesdays for new episodes. I plan on cranking out a lot more in the upcoming future. Also, if you didn't know, on Spotify, if you click on an episode on mobile, you can interact there and you can tell me what you think about this episode and other episodes, and it would be great to hear from you and see what you're thinking about the podcast. If you want to be the first to get new episodes and stay updated and get free new devices and sample packs and other stuff that I'll be sending out in the future, join the newsletter. Just go to liveproducersonline.com/newsletter and or check out the links in the show notes. Make sure to give this guest a follow on the socials. Give them some love for spending their time. And once again, thanks for listening to the podcast. I will see you next time. Later.